It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
On Friday, President Trump issued his executive order on immigration, and what followed were the massive protests that we've all seen erupting at airports across the country. Scenes like this one playing out at JFK Airport with people reacting emotionally to the president's order. And it put the administration on the defensive, so they sent administration officials, including Chief of Staff Reince Priebus, out on the Sunday show circuit pushing back.
It wasn't chaos. I mean, the fact of the matter is 325,000 people from foreign countries came into the United States yesterday, and 109 people were detained for further questioning. Most of those people were moved out. We've got a couple dozen more that remain, and I would suspect as long as they're not awful people that they will move through before another half a day today. And perhaps some of these people should be detained further, and if they're folks that shouldn't be in this country, they're going to be detained. And so apologize for nothing here.
And the president took to Twitter as well, saying this: our country needs strong borders and extreme vetting now. Look what is happening all over Europe and indeed the world, a horrible mess. Now, outraged Democrats like Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer became emotional reacting to the order.
This executive order was mean-spirited and un-American. It was implemented in a way that created chaos and confusion across the country, and it will only serve to embolden and inspire those around the globe who will do us harm. It must be reversed immediately.
And later today, California Senator Dianne Feinstein is expected to introduce two bills that would curtail the travel ban. We'll see how that plays out. The president also getting some pushback from fellow Republicans.
All right, that was Griff Jenkins of Fox News. This is Sandy Rios. Good morning. If you've been watching the news, you know that, you would think from CNN and from Fox yesterday, too, that the whole world is falling apart because of the executive orders that President Donald Trump signed on Friday. If you would hear, these stories coming, especially out of L.A., you would think that people are imprisoned and they're disappearing and people are not getting their medicine. It's a spectacle. But, according to Reuters, people in the heartland, not quite so concerned. So this is interesting, and we need to talk about it, methinks. There are seven countries involved: Iran, Iraq, Syria, Libya, Somalia, Sudan, and Yemen. It's a temporary halt. It's going to be more vetting for those countries and also a temporary halt on the entry of refugees into the country. Well, is this legal? Can the four judges who have issued orders and the ACLU and the Council on American Islamic Relations stop the executive orders? What is this unconstitutional? These are all the things that we're hearing. Well, I can't think of anyone better to discuss this than my next guest. Andy McCarthy is a former federal prosecutor, the author of Willful Blindness, an expert on Islam, radical Islam, because he prosecuted the blind sheikh in the first World Trade Center bombing. And he joins us this morning from New York, and that's also why I want to talk to him. Good morning, Andy.
Hi, Sandy. How are you?
Oh, I'm good. I'm good. And I know that I've read some of the things that you've written, and so I just want you to tell me what you think about this. Is there anything about the executive orders, first of all, especially the ones on Friday, that were unconstitutional?
No, it's constitutional and it's legal. I think there's a lot to be said for the notion that it could have been implemented better. But if we're just strictly talking about is what the president did legal, there's no question that it's legal.
And along with that, I'm hearing all this hand-wringing about no religious test, that it is unconstitutional. They cite all kinds of things. Now I'm blanking out. But and the thing that always occurs to me, Andy, is that do non-citizens have constitutional rights?
In some instances, they do. It's, you know, there's no one single answer to that, Sandy, because a lot of it depends on, and this is a result of sort of scattershot court decisions over the decades, but a lot of it depends on what right are we talking about, where are the aliens, what is the status of the aliens. You know, people who are inside the United States, even if they're illegal aliens, have, for example, Fourth Amendment rights. You can't, if you have an illegal alien in an apartment and you think that there are, you know, drugs or guns in there that shouldn't be there, police officer can't bust down the door. He's got to get a search warrant just like he would for anyone else. On the other hand, overseas, the Constitution generally does not extend the protections of the Bill of Rights to people who are aliens, particularly aliens who don't have any contacts with the United States. So there's a scale that, you know, goes from very few, if any, rights of aliens to complete constitutional protection, depending on the circumstances of what we're talking about.
Well, so we keep hearing that Chuck Schumer, one of the most stunning sound clips has to be Chuck Schumer crying over this. I mean, that's another issue for editorial comment, but he keeps claiming, and so do Nancy Pelosi and so does the left, that this is a religious test. From the standard, first of all, just on that question alone, is the executive order setting the bar for a religious test for people coming into this country from your perspective?
Well, you know, look, first of all, to the extent that we're talking about refugees, there's a religious test in the statute, and I've been trying to point this out for a couple of years. What refugee admission is generally about is whether people are being persecuted in their homeland. Historically, the major reason for persecution is religion. And as a result, religion is explicitly listed in the statute that talks about whether someone qualifies as a refugee and should be admitted as one. So I always think it's kind of stupid for people to shriek at the thought of there being a religious test with respect to the admission of refugees, because there's one written in the law. It just seems to me that it's kind of silly to shriek this way. But, you know, it's part of the whole, you know, the United States is at war with Islam riff. And, you know, they figure people aren't going to check what the law actually says. And as a result, this becomes agitprop. But I must say, as somebody who wrote a memoir called Willful Blindness, getting on close to, I guess, a decade ago now, I'm very surprised to hear people who are generally on my own side saying that this is not a Muslim ban and daring people to look at the executive order and defying, you know, saying, where do you see the word Islam in there? Or where do you see Muslim in there? I mean, come on. What we're talking about here, and we have to stop pretending that it's otherwise, is a construction of Islam that is centuries old, millennia old, actually, and that is inextricably linked with Islam. It's not the only way of interpreting Islam, and we hope it will someday be a marginal, discredited way of interpreting Islam. But the fact of the matter is, Sharia supremacism is woven into Islam, and you can't get at it without confronting the fact that you're dealing with Muslim-majority countries. Those are the places where it thrives. So it's true that we don't want to ban all Muslims. We don't want to have a categorical ban against Muslims, but we do want to have a categorical ban against Sharia supremacists. And when you have an executive order that is written for the very purpose of going after Sharia supremacists who are Muslims, and it specifically identifies seven countries which are Muslim-majority countries, I don't think we ought to hide under our beds when people say, you know, this is a Muslim ban. We should explain what it is that we're looking to stop and what it is that we're not looking to stop. But obviously it's a ban on Muslim countries, and to my mind, one of the major criticisms of it is it misses a lot of places where you have cauldrons of Sharia supremacist, anti-Western, anti-assimilationist activities that are actually missed by the executive order.
Well, as you and I both know, there is such fuzzy thinking, and that actually would be a compliment on this issue, especially by officials in Washington and elites. I mean, they just don't understand it, Andy, and you've been in the business of trying to make it clear for, well, since you prosecuted the blind sheikh, you've been trying to explain what the problem is, and hopefully this is the beginning of trying to explain it, but we've got a long way to go. I'm curious on the legal aspect, too. When you saw the people invading the airport, both in at Kennedy and LAX and other airports, Dallas, is it lawful for groups of people to go in? You know, we have such trouble getting through security at the airports, and we can't park our cars we can't stop for more than a few minutes. How in the world does a massive amount of people invade an airport and occupy it and get away with that?
Well, you know, look, we have a very strong tradition of political dissent and allowing people to demonstrate. And as long as they are not destroying property or interfering with the necessary operations of government such that they cannot be carried out, I think they're going to get a long leash to demonstrate. And that's our tradition. And again, I think that when it veers into rioting or the destruction of property or the interference with the essential missions of government that we all actually support, then I think, you know, the authorities actually obviously have to step in, but they don't want to be accused of curtailing people's constitutional rights unnecessarily. So I think they're going to let a lot of it go on as long as there's not violence.
You know, PJ Media yesterday, you probably saw this, there were probably 75, maybe 100, I don't know, Muslims with their prayer rugs in the luggage area of Dallas-Fort Worth Airport. And so there was no way people could get in to get their luggage, and they were, you know, reciting the Muslim call to prayer. I just don't understand. I honestly don't understand. That would be an obstruction of services. If people can't get in to get their luggage, The other question about that, and Andy, we're going to run out of time here, that sounds like a part of the dawah, which is the subjugation, this gets into Muslim law, and I know you only have a couple of minutes, but what do you think about what happened in Dallas, and should they be allowed to do that?
No, they shouldn't be allowed to you know, stretch themselves out in a way that prevents people from operating the airport. And I do think, Sandy, this goes to what we've been talking about, which is for 25 years, we've been trying to make the point to people of what this ideology is about. And I think if people understood it better, they'd be less tolerant of some of the more aggressive ideological stuff that goes on. But at the same time, you have to evaluate a situation like the one you're discussing or describing with what the police are dealing with in the airport. And if they think that letting a little bit of lawbreaking go on rather than, you know, interrupting it and causing a bigger scene that would put more people in danger, it's hard for us who have the luxury of just evaluating it rather than being in the middle of it to second guess them.
Andy, we never have enough time. Andy's written two articles about this in the last couple of days, and we will post both of them. We didn't even get into your concerns about the timing of this and the method of implementing. You do have concerns about that. We'll put that on our Facebook page so people can read it. Andy McCarthy, National Review, PJ Media, all kinds of places. One of my heroes and friends. Andy, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, Sandy.
Okay, talk to you soon. All right, coming up next, Mark Kerkorian of the Center for Immigration Studies will weigh in on what actually did happen, who's being affected. So stay tuned. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Dan Celia of Financial Issues.
Would you make one of the most important phone calls that you can make as far as your economic, your financial stewardship. I believe that permanent income is incredibly important to us, especially when you're retired. Listen, one thing we know for certain, the consumption of goods and your cost are never going to change. Make sure that you protect your income. Social Security, you will likely have maybe a pension. Add to permanent income with a charitable gift annuity and do the Lord's work. There's no better organization to do it with than the AFA Foundation, and no better time in our economy than right now.
Call and speak with a representative of the AFA Foundation at 800-326-4543, extension 345.
Hello, I'm Ed Vitagliano, co-host of Today's Issues each weekday morning on American Family Radio. I'm also Executive Vice President of American Family Association, the parent ministry of AFR. I just want to welcome the many new listeners to the AFR family as we have expanded into several new areas over the past 6 months. Who pays for AFR to stay on the air, you might be asking? Well, the answer is simple. AFR depends on our listeners to make financial contributions so that we can keep our radio stations on the air. If you appreciate the news, talk, information, and inspiration that you receive from AFR each day, we ask that you remember us financially when funds allow. You can make a donation at AFR.net or by calling 800-FAMILIES extension 2. That's AFR.net or 800-FAMILIES. Please keep us in your prayers as we continue to impact America for Christ.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with this Fox News and commentary next. Truett McConnell University is training students to love the Lord, love the Word, love the Church, and love the lost. Scripture is the foundation for everything they do. It's who they are, preparing students not just for a career, but to fulfill God's high calling on their lives. Truett McConnell University offers a wide array of bachelor's programs, some online, and they also have an outstanding Master of Arts in Theology. So if you'd like to schedule a visit to Truett's campus in the North Georgia Mountains, visit truett.edu. An update to a story I shared with you last week, that Dallas high school teacher who staged a mock assassination of President Trump inside her classroom has been suspended. The school district tells me they are investigating the incident. The Secret Service tells me they are aware of what happened, but declined to say if the teacher will face charges. You can watch the video as well as read more details at toddstarnes.com. But let me warn you, the video is unsettling to say the least. You can see the teacher lunging at an image of the president on a whiteboard. She had a squirt gun, and she was screaming, "Die!" What happened in Texas is yet another example of how our public schools have been turned into social engineering petri dishes, festering with rancorous rhetoric and hate. Teachers should be about the business of educating our children, not radicalizing them. I'm Todd Starnes.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Any effort to strengthen national security, to improve the vetting process, I think that's all perfectly reasonable and totally legitimate. In fact, we would expect that of the president. I think the key is doing it in a way that doesn't risk creating more enemies than threats it deters. I know that former senior commanders in Iraq and Afghanistan are very concerned about this order and the impact it will have on those that helped us in Iraq and Afghanistan, the interpreters, translators, and so on, who were promised safe haven in the United States and now may not get it.
Oh, that's Robert Gates, former Secretary of Defense. To the first part, you know, he's supporting. He always speaks out of both sides of his mouth, so what's different about that? He was Secretary of Defense under Obama, and he would be one way, then he'd be another way. I remember he wrote a book, you know, talking about criticizing the Obama administration, but while he served the Obama administration, he was all down with the things that they did. So, but I think the point I'd like to make on the last thing is that extreme vetting should let us know. If someone helped us in some of these hotbed areas, that's what you figure out when you're vetting them. So I don't understand that. And this to this business of us making the Muslim world more angry, I think Donald Trump got it right when he said, more angry? They're already angry. How can we make them more angry at us? It's just very interesting, and it's, you know, bringing things to a head. And so when we come back, Mark Krikorian will join us. Mark, of course, is an expert on immigration and refugee resettlement. He's the president of Center for Immigration Studies, one of my favorite guests, and he will join us next. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
This is a Decency Minute. I'm Bill Johnson. 2 years ago, our culture was swept up in the pornographic movie 50 Shades of Grey. Millions of women and men flocked to the theaters to see a movie that glorifies sexual violence and degrades women. Now a second movie entitled 50 Shades Darker is about to be released right before Valentine's Day. The epidemic of pornography and the popularity of 50 Shades of Grey indicate the depravity of our nation, including within the church. A Barna study revealed that 64% of Christians men and 15% of Christian women admitted to viewing pornography at least once a month. 50 Shades equates love with lust. We, the Bride of Christ, are called to not only oppose such filth, but also model to the world where true love can be found, only in Christ and in following His design for human love. This is a Decency Minute, an outreach broadcast of the American Decency Association based in Fremont, Michigan. Find us at americandecency.org. I'm Bill Johnson.
The political and cultural landscape of our nation will continue to undergo major changes with the shift in power in our nation's capital. All the issues we care about, religious liberty, the sanctity of life and marriage, national security, immigration, and the economy will be up for debate. Focal Point will help you process it all from a biblical perspective live every weekday afternoon from 1 to 3 Central on American Family Radio. I'm your congenial, convivial, and amiable host, Brian Fisher, and I approve this message.
From his youth to his old age, Daniel provides an example of a long life dedicated to God. This week, we continue to discover the timeless wisdom from Daniel's later years as we conclude our series, And He Shall Reign. Listen Monday through Friday to Truth for Life with Alistair Begg.
Truth for Life, weekday mornings at 11:30 Central on AFR and online at afr.net.
The Rapid Response Arm of 8 Days of Hope is responding to tornado victims in Hattiesburg, Mississippi. On January 21st, a tornado severely damaged hundreds of homes and killed 4 people. Will you please volunteer to help Hattiesburg residents? Here's 8 Days of Hope director Steve Tiber.
We need your help today. I mean, it's that simple. We're looking for people who just want to serve others. You know, you don't have to be super gifted. Every disaster gives an opportunity for a believer to share a glimpse of Jesus Christ. You know, the best sermon I ever heard was the one I saw. We're just there to love others as God commands us. And here's where you and I get to be the hands and feet of Jesus Christ.
To volunteer to help with Hattiesburg tornado relief, please visit 8daysofhope.com. Financial donations are also needed to support this ministry effort. To give, please visit 8daysofhope.com and pray for this relief effort and for the families affected by this devastating tornado. 8 Days of Hope is a nonprofit Christian ministry.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Our new president has done much to clarify the difference between those who, like Donald Trump, subscribe to America First and those who, in the immortal words of the late great Ambassador Jean Kirkpatrick, blame America First. The latter are much in evidence among the talking heads, the mainstream media, and the crowds of protesters against the latest Trump executive orders, designed, among other things, to stop importing jihadists. They bray and applaud as Muslim Brotherhood fronts like the Council on American-Islamic Relations, better known as CARE, sue the U.S. government to ensure that more of their fellow Sharia supremacists are admitted into this country. Fortunately, Donald Trump is president today because most of us still believe we should put America first rather than embrace, empower, and embolden those determined initially to blame and ultimately to destroy her. This is Frank Affney.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
These conclusions were not vetted. There's so many questions. For example, it didn't filter down to our customs people. Who can come in? Who can't? Is a green card holder, as was originally interpreted, who's legally in this country, can that person be barred from coming into the country? What about the Iraqi pilots that are training right now in Tucson, Arizona, learning to fly the F-16? And there will be more coming in. So there's so much confusion out there, and published reports are that neither the Department of Homeland Security or the Justice Department or others were consulted about this before this decision was made. Finally, right now we have several thousand Americans who are fighting in Iraq against ISIS. Is Iraq the same as Iran is? Of course not. So it's been a very confusing process. I think the effect will probably, in some areas, give ISIS some more propaganda.
You know, when it comes to confusion, Senator McCain obviously would recognize it because that's his constant state of affairs. You know, thank you, Arizona, for giving us Mr. Secure the Border, John McCain. You know, of course, he always wants to secure the border when he's running, but he forgets about it when he actually becomes a senator. So John McCain, Lindsey Graham, Rob Portman, I'm not sure if there are others, there probably are, who are, you know, criticizing President Trump for these orders and for this so-called chaos at the airports. We have chaos, according to them. If you look at CNN, even Fox yesterday, it's just a total breakdown. The whole world is ending because people are being detained and vetted, and in some cases sent back to their countries. So the world is falling. This is the worst tragedy that ever happened. This is the most American thing we've ever done. Just listen to the SAG Awards last night with the actors melting down, with Chuck Schumer crying. So it's a serious, serious situation. And I guess middle America didn't get the memo, because according to Reuters, they're not quite so concerned. They're actually applauding the president for putting American safety first. All right. Well, Mark Kerkorian joins us. He's the president of the Center for Immigration Studies. Mark, just an aside before we start here, have you been doing a lot of media this morning?
Yes, I have, over all weekend. I had to rush, leave church early and rush to do media.
Yeah,
I did go to church first.
I'm glad to hear that, because you know what? That's kind of important right now. We have to sort of calibrate our minds, don't we? Honestly, I think, you know, God is not the author of confusion. So I do think that when we need to put him first, because he helps to order our minds on these confusing situations. And Mark, you have so much wisdom and clear thinking on this issue, and that's one of the reasons I often look to you on these situations. Before we jump into this one, though, let me ask you this: describe when immigrants, green card holders, people from these seven countries and other Muslim countries come into our airports now. What's been happening under the Obama Department of Homeland Security?
Well, they're basically just let in. I mean, if they have visas, they're just admitted like any other travelers. Now, you know, there's always some travelers who are pulled aside for what they call secondary inspection, another sort of extra questioning, for any number of reasons, because the inspectors at the airport have the authority to, you know, turn away anybody they want. So probably people from these seven countries, even before, were probably pulled aside more frequently than a traveler from, I don't know, Japan or Belgium. But basically, they were simply, you know, they were let in just like any other traveler before.
All right, so not really that much vetting, because sometimes we would have been hearing about it. If they had been sent back, we would have heard about it, Mark, because we hear the caterwauling now, you know, coming from the Council on American and Islamic Relations and all the others. They're describing it as, you know, the tsunami of horribleness.
Well,
yeah, I have a prejudice
on
this,
because remember, President Obama suspended refugee resettlement from Iraq for years. Likewise, almost no refugees from Syria were admitted under Obama, so that some of this really is, you know, party or president specific. In other words, if President Trump does things that really were already done by President Obama, it somehow changes the nature of that activity because of who did it.
Yeah, you know, there was an interesting article this morning in PJ Media talking about, I'm kind of skipping ahead here of my questions, but about the Soros link now to these sudden protests who sprung up. They've actually traced already, like these all these attorneys that are showing up, they're tracing their who funds them and what organizations they work for, and they trace back to Soros-funded organizations. You know, Johnny on the spot, George Soros there to create any kind of confusion he can on immigration and to really secure open borders, which is what he's all about, and the destruction of this country. But in reality, Mark, quantify for us the kinds of people that have been affected and how they have truly been affected, the best of your knowledge.
Well, I mean, as far as the people actually at airports, there were 109 people, total 109 people who were
nationwide.
What's that?
You mean nationwide 109
yeah, nationwide,
people, including
109 people who were caught up. They were in transit and were stuck in the middle. And that's unfortunate, but it's kind of unavoidable in the sense that something like this has to be done all at once. You can't send out a memo to ISIS saying, hey, you know, in a week we're going to clamp down, so make sure you get your people in before that. You know, some of this confusion was inevitable. Some of it probably could have been avoided. But, you know, this administration is still kind of bare bones. You know, it's a skeleton crew to some degree. And so they didn't have, I think, the sort of fully developed talking points so that they could explain to people as they were releasing this why it wasn't the end of the world. Now, some people wouldn't have believed them anyway, obviously, but the fact is, you might well have had less tumult over the weekend if they'd made a little clearer and done a better communications job. But the policy itself is a perfectly prudent, very limited first step toward a more secure visa and refugee rules. It's not the policy at all. It's not the final form. This is just hitting the pause button so they can look at these policies and see if there's anything they need to tighten up or change.
I'm still stunned. I just have to go back and restate what you just said. Now, we've got Los Angeles, you know, thousands of people demonstrating. We've got Dallas, them occupying, you know, the luggage area, doing the Muslim call to prayer on their rugs. We have all these demonstrators coming out in New York City and other airports as well. And there are 109 people nationally affected by this. You would think it was thousands. You would think it were thousands of people, Mark, with the way they're responding.
Yeah, no, I agree. And frankly, by Sunday morning, 81 of them had already been let into the country, including all of the people who had green cards. Basically by Sunday morning, it was, 28 people that it was about. That's it.
You know, I was listening yesterday a lot, mostly to Fox, actually, and I was pretty appalled, and honestly, by what I heard from Eric Shawn and Arthur Neville. They had, you know, a lineup of critics and no defenders. Jesse Jackson was one of them. They talked up things. This is the language they used, that stories that my family's in prison. People are imprisoned and they've disappeared and we can't find them. My father's on medication, and the inference is, you know, he might die and then he won't get his medications. I mean, we're hearing all of these kinds of things, just a cacophony of dramatic stories. This is kind of typical, and this is my language now, of the Muslim grievance machine put out by CARE, the Council on American Islamic Relations. Wouldn't you agree this is kind of their MO?
Well, this is a general grievance machine kind of thing. In other words, they're just sort of one piece of the bigger puzzle. And I think, you know, you're right. I think there's no doubt that Soros-funded groups were kind of the spark. But frankly, there were a lot of people who were, you know, just waiting for some opportunity to do this protesting. I mean, it would have happened probably in a more haphazard way, even if there weren't any Soros-funded groups, because there's lots of people out there who basically, I mean, I think for a lot of them, and I'm kind of only half-joking here, feel guilty they didn't vote in November, and so now they're showing up to vote 3 months late. So in other words, I think a lot of this would have happened whether there was any sort of guiding hand behind it or not, because, you know, there's a lot of people who really don't think we should have borders, who really don't like the America the way it is. And part of that is a sympathy for Islamic radical groups like this. And but that my point is that's just one part of a broader grievance sort of business, grievance industry against America.
I asked you just a few minutes ago if you were doing a lot of media, and of course you are doing a lot of media, but I'd be curious to know, Mark, where you have been, because I didn't see, I didn't hear your voice yesterday when I was listening to Fox. Again, I heard all critics. Really,
well, ironically, I did some Fox last week before this, in other words, about the previous executive orders, but I was on, I did CNN yesterday, and I'm doing CNN again today, which is something that's kind of unusual, because they haven't had immigration skeptics on for a long time.
Oh, that's amazing, and that's really good news, actually. So, all right, so let's go now to the Dallas-Fort Worth situation. I saw, you know, PJ Media reported and gave a little audio clip and showed probably 75 to 100 Muslims on prayer rugs bowing, saying the Muslim call to prayer, shouting Allah, and they were doing it in the baggage claim area. I just want to know what you think about that, what that means, and how we should feel about that.
Yeah, frankly, I encourage more of that, because there's nothing that's going to turn off ordinary kind of non-political, middle-of-the-road people than hundreds of people taking over a baggage claim area and yelling Allahu Akbar. So, I mean, I got to say, personally, just from a kind of cynical political point of view, knock yourself out, fellas. The more, the better.
You know, there are seven countries, and yesterday Eric Schahn was making much of the fact that of those seven countries listed, there are Iran, Syria, Libya, Somalia, Sudan, Yemen. A lot of countries are not on there, and so Eric was reciting in detail where all of the most recent terrorists were from, the San Bernardino shooters, the Boston bombers, and none of them were from those countries. And the inference, of course, is then that this is a ridiculous executive order because it doesn't include all the countries, and just sort of a complaint about that. So I'm wondering what you think about that. Why the seven countries? I think I know, but I want you to please tell us the real story there. And should there be more on this list?
I mean, it's kind of a curious critique from people who are against border control to say that, you know, we should really have Saudi Arabia on this list, too. It's like they're against the whole thing. They're just saying anything just to get people to, you know, see if they can get people to agree with them. This list was not pulled out of the air by the Trump administration. This is specifically a list of what the State Department calls countries of concern. It's nothing new. It's been incorporated. It's been in legislation that President Obama signed. The State Department has promulgated the list. What it boils down to, look, is four countries that basically have no government at all. It's complete anarchy in Libya and Somalia and Yemen and Syria. Then you've got Iraq, which really is kind of three countries. It's not really one country anymore. And then you've got Sudan and Iran, which are sworn enemies of the United States, state sponsors of terrorist organizations. So it's a perfectly plausible list. Does it address everybody? No, it only covers like 10% of the world's Muslims. So it's a curious Muslim ban that excludes 90% of the world's Muslims. It's not it's ludicrous to call it a Muslim ban, but it's a starting point. This is my point about this isn't a final policy. All this is hitting the pause button and taking a breath so you can look at what our policy should be. Should it be tightened? Should there be different rules? That kind of thing. So the answer is, should we also be looking at Saudi Arabia and the UAE and other places? Probably. But this is just a first step. And so to say that this doesn't do everything, one executive order signed on a Friday doesn't do everything, is expecting a lot, quite frankly, from something. It takes a long time to get this kind of policy changed.
You heard the clip that that we played from John McCain on Face the Nation, and he was pointing out Iraq. You know, and his point, this is his point, we have soldiers fighting in Iraq, and now we can't let Iraqis in. How, you know, what's the matter with us? So we have all these people that helped us in Iraq, and now they won't be able to get in. I'll let you take that one, Mark. Comment on that.
The people with the special immigrant visas, this is what they're called, in other words, like translators and that kind of thing, are being let in, but frankly, they're not, we can't just assume that they're always good guys. They're often, sometimes they're not. sometimes if they come here, their families end up being radicalized. And let's face it, why are we in Iraq if we're just going to move everybody who helps us there to the United States? Wasn't the point to make Iraq more stable? And the fact that we have soldiers there isn't incompatible with this temporary travel pause, because we have soldiers in Iraq because it's in our interest to fight ISIS. We have a common interest. It doesn't mean that Iraq is a wonderful place without problems in it. It has real problems. The government only controls half, maybe not even half, the country. So, no, I don't see any inconsistency between, enhanced screening of people from Iraq and the fact that we are involved in military activities in Iraq.
You know, actually, to your point, when my husband was still with the FBI before he retired, he spent some time in Afghanistan, and they did a lot of investigations and polygraphs through translators, and he told me there were some he just could tell. He did not trust them. He didn't trust their translation. And so, I mean, that's just to your point. They're not all our friends, and sometimes they actually worked against us, even in translating. So that's a silly statement on his part, but you know, I think he's a senator full of silly statements. Mark, there's been a lot of discussion about the president's conversation with Saudi Arabia and other United Arab Emirates and talking about creating so-called safe zones. Do you know anything about that?
Well, I mean, all I know is what's reported in the news, that the President Trump spoke with the Saudi king yesterday. And Saudi king agreed that safe zones for refugees in Syria would be a good idea. The Russian foreign minister also said that, you know, as long as they weren't basically bases for rebels to use, if they were actual safe zones for refugees, that the Russians were for it, too. My concern is that we not be the ones creating these safe zones. Because, look, what is a safe zone? Safe zone would involve our invading Syria and creating an area where we provide security, where our soldiers are there, and, they're a place to house refugees. The idea of a safe zone in Syria is a good idea. I don't want my 21-year-old to be, enlisted into the Army to go and create safe zones in Syria. That's not our problem. Mm-hmm. Why doesn't Saudi Arabia create safe zones? Why isn't Saudi Arabia a safe zone where they take in Syrian refugees? They don't take Syrian refugees. Only we do.
You think that might be part of the conversation?
I don't know. That would be a good point. I mean, I'm assuming it's not like President Trump is shy about that sort of thing, so I'm assuming it came up. That's the kind of pressure I would like to see this administration put on places like Saudi Arabia and the UAE that are extremely wealthy and, frankly, don't have that many people in them. And, there's no reason that we should be taking the Syrians when there's a country next door where people speak the same language, the same religion, same or at least, similar culture. They're the ones that should be housing these people if any of them need to be housed and moved from the places they already are now in Turkey or Lebanon or Jordan.
Mark, wasn't it the Center for Immigration Studies that did a study that pointed out that if we left the refugees near their home countries or in their region, it would only cost, I'm thinking it was $12,000 to keep them there a year rather than bring them here, which is so expensive to reintegrate them into a new culture and to pay all the benefits and all of that. It was cheaper and also better for them that they stay in near their homeland.
We did research on this. It's on our
Okay, that's
website.
What I thought.
We
That's
actually
what I thought.
Delved into the numbers and the costs, and our conclusion was that the five-year cost of resettling a refugee in the United States from the Middle East, the five-year cost is 12 times greater than helping them than the UN's own estimate for what it costs to help somebody in the Middle East, in the country where they've taken refuge, which to me means that we could help 12 people for the cost of bringing one here. In other words, every person that we resettle from the Middle East to the United States represents 11 other people who aren't being helped with that same money. And money is not infinite. There's always going to be a limit to what we're going to be able to spend on refugee protection, and it is morally incumbent on us to have that money do the most good. I mean, this, I think, really is a moral issue. We resettle refugees almost purely out of selfish reasons, because it makes us feel good. You know, we get to welcome the family, the cute family at the Kansas City airport, and the kid has a, you know, teddy bear, and I get that. I get that. There's an emotional thing here, but the left, unfortunately, is driven by emotion and feelings without actually using their head most of the time. And our head tells us that that same money helps 12 people in the Middle East. And the analogy I use is, look, if there's 12 people floundering in the water, and you have two choices of how you can help them. One is you throw 12 life preservers. It's not great, but it keeps them from drowning. Or you send one luxurious yacht that can only hold one person, and you leave the other 11 floundering in the water. That's just morally wrong, in my opinion. Yeah. Refugee resettlement is morally indefensible.
Mark, we've been talking about, oh, man, the tension in terms of bringing in refugees, of allowing people in this country to come without being vetted. We've seen the results of that. We've seen not only with illegal immigrant criminals, we've seen the dangers from Islamic radicals. We've borne the burden of it and seen our own people killed. So now this president is moving to try to make the border safe, to sort of secure America in every possible way that he can. And, of course, the result is the response is like this screeching, howling. We've got four judges filing lawsuits. We've got the ACLU who've raised $20 million in the last couple of days alone just to fight this. We have hundreds of lawyers descending on the airports. We've got the Council on American Islamic Relations caterwauling their stories and filing suits. This is going to be a showdown, don't you think?
Well, no, clearly. I mean, you know, in one sense, even though the left obviously was, you know, outraged by Trump's election, it is the best thing that ever happened to them, in the sense that, you know, it is raising them money like there's no tomorrow. I mean, so in an institutional sense, this is the greatest thing that Trump is the greatest thing that ever happened to the ACLU. But no, you're right. There are going to be repeated confrontations, whether it's like this, whether it's over sanctuary cities. Remember, we haven't even seen what's going to happen there yet when they try to stop some federal funds to these places and try to force them to stop letting illegal immigrant criminals onto the street. So there's going to be repeated confrontations like this. You're going to see it when President Trump announces Supreme Court nominee, which could be as early as today. It might be, but it might be later this week. All of these people protesting at the airports and other places, you know, they'll flip the sign over and put a different message on it, and then they'll be complaining about that. So we're in for a good while of this kind of tumultuous politics, I'm afraid.
The whole idea of designating the Muslim Brotherhood a terrorist organization, and I need to say again that the Council on American Islamic Relations is the PR branch of the Muslim Brotherhood. They're joined at the hip, and if the Muslim Students Association, the Islamic Society of North America, all of them deeply entrenched in government on both sides, actually, more on the Democrats, but also with their nose under the tent in the Republican Party. What do you think the chances of them declaring the Muslim Brotherhood a terrorist organization are, Mark?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's not my area. I'm really not sure. It wouldn't surprise me at all. It's not like it's unjustified. It depends. In a sense, it depends. The White House's kind of strategic thinking. Do they want to kind of do everything all at once to create so many targets for the other side that they can't effectively respond? Or do they want to wait and let some things calm down before they do that? That's a strategic question I have no answer to, so I don't know.
As if they ask me, I'd say stir the pot. I say stir the pot. I think it's a great idea to announce the Supreme Court justice today and just keep stirring the pot, because they can only have so much outrage. We know we were on the other side of it with Barack Obama, and I thought we thought we had our hands full, but I think Donald Trump is handing them more than President Obama, you know, threw our way that we had to fight. It's pretty interesting to watch it. Mark, Because I think, obviously, Donald Trump won this election, and saying that he was going to do these kinds of things, we might not have known the details, but he's doing what he said he was going to do, and he won because of that. Is there anything that you think the American people who are watching this and saying, yes, we have to bring some common sense, and we've got to have some boundaries, and we've got to have a wall, and we've got to have borders. Is there anything they can do to weigh in on this? When I watch the programs, I don't see them being asked. I see the pundits out of Washington. I see, the grievance experts. But I don't see the American people really being asked what they think. So is there anything they can do?
Yeah, probably there is, actually. My organization is a think tank, so we don't do the kind of citizen action stuff that other groups do. But if I could give a plug for a different organization, the thing I think they could do is go to Numbers USA, which is on the same perspective on immigration as us, but they do the more lobbying, grassroots type stuff. It's numbersusa.com. And there's opportunities there for people to sign up for, you know, for call-in campaigns and faxing or Twittering or what have you. That's the thing I would suggest to help people make their voice heard. They're also on Facebook. In fact, they have more Facebook followers than any public policy group, even more than the NRA. The NRA used to be number one. They've blown past the NRA on Facebook. So it's Numbers USA, and that's the way I think I would suggest ordinary citizens to try to have their make their opinions known.
Well, that's a great suggestion, and of course, I'm a strong supporter of NumbersUSA.com, too. So NumbersUSA.com, that is a great suggestion, Mark. And the Center for Immigration Studies is a great source of the facts on the whole issue of immigration and refugee resettlement and all of it. So Mark is the president, and he does a great job. Mark, thank you so much for giving us so much of your time this morning. So go forth and straighten CNN out for us, okay?
Thank you, Cindy. We'll do.
Okay, thanks a lot, Mark. Okay, bye-bye. All right, well, isn't it interesting? And so today we are hearing reports that the president of the United States may issue the name of his next Supreme Court justice. From my best understanding, it looks like William Pryor is not going to be on that list. Now, that's just my impression from things I'm hearing. It looks like Gorsuch is his last name, may be one of the high contenders, and I'm doing this from memory. The third one, whose name I can't recall, is actually a friend of Donald Trump's, a colleague of Donald Trump's sister, who is a judge in New York. So there are three of them, it looks like, left on the list. I kind of think it's going to be Gorsuch, honestly. Neil Gorsuch, that's his name. And so if that's announced, that'll be another battlefront. And so we'll see if George Soros has enough money, you know, to pay enough protesters to get out there and protest all of these things at one time. Maybe even we could stretch the limits of his pocketbook, but I'm not sure. This is such an interesting story. You know, the Department of Homeland Security sent out a statement last night that was just powerful. And, I think of the leadership of Jay Johnson and all the fiasco and the lack of enforcement of law under him. And then the statement that went out from DHS saying that we will apply the president's executive orders, we will follow the law. And it's just amazing. These are interesting times. But we have to be diligent. We have to continue to speak the truth. And we've got to not, you know, we've got to bolster. If we think something is right, we need to do our part to ensure it. I would suggest that you not shy from conversations. Tell people how you think respectfully. And let's weigh in on this. I think it's important. All right, Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.